Thank you very much, Mary. Thank you. Now, I'm realising that one of the things which Douglas said to you earlier was, quite correctly, that this is a song of celebration. But as you'll have heard in some of the things that Mary has just read about, it's a slightly odd song of celebration because there's quite a lot of bleakness referred to in it. But we'll come back to that. So let's just look at why the song was sung, what it was about. And it was obviously an incredibly important moment, almost the pivotal moment of the Exodus gospel. So everyone has before and after watershed moments in their lives. You can tell a story of your life and you can say, that was before we moved, or that was after my mum was sick, or that was before we had children, or that was after I went away to university. Many of us can think of events that changed us profoundly. There is a before and after moment in most of our lives. The same can be true on the bigger life of our country. We might talk about it being before the Brexit referendum or after the Iraq war. I was listening to someone on a podcast the other day who was talking about life before and after the internet. And I think, yes, that was certainly a big change for us all. So we can tell stories of our own lives and our lives together and the great events that happened to us, either individually or collectively, and we can use those events to shape how we tell our stories. So today our scripture text is about an event like that. It's a story of deliverance for Egypt, a before and after event, an event that shaped the lives of people, the people of Israel, forever. A turning point in their relationship with God. An event that can and still does shape our understanding of God. And it's all here in the book of Exodus. The descendants of Jacob are enslaved in Egypt at the beginning of the book of Exodus. And by the time we get to chapter 15, they're no longer under the thumb of the Pharaoh. They're no longer slaves. They are people singing God's praises for their freedom. Their new freedom. And the horses and the riders, as we heard at various points of the passage that Mary just read, were thrown into the sea. Now, someone hearing this story for the very first time might ask, how did the people escape? But the word escape is not a good word in describing the event. Escape is always something you do for yourself. I escape. But in Exodus, the concept is not escape. The concept is deliverance. The people of Israel were delivered. Deliver is not something you do for yourself. It is something done for you. So Israel was delivered. They were slaves, and then God intervened. God snatched them out of Pharaoh's power. In the passage today, we heard a reference to the story in which God threw the horses and riders into the sea. In Exodus chapter 19, it says, you have seen what I have done, what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagles' wings, and brought you to myself. It is God acting, God intervening, God saving. And that is the event, the galvanizing event, that brings us to the passage that Mary was reading today, to a mountain in the wilderness where Moses will go up to the mountain to meet with God. There, he will be given the law, which is again a start, a new beginning, the Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments tell us, I am the Lord your God, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt, up out of the house of slavery. And as you read the rest of the Bible, or hear it read to you, you'll see this event, the event of deliverance being from Egypt, being referred to over and over again. There are 10 different Psalms that specifically mention the deliverance from Egypt. And the prophets often refer to God's saving power in the Exodus. And of course, the Exodus was and still is remembered in the rituals of the Jewish faith, in everyday prayers and in their celebration of their Passover every year. The people of Israel never wanted to forget that they had been delivered. The Exodus was their big, and possibly our big, before and after event. For us today, as a Christian community, the references to Exodus continue into the Gospels. I've read in lots of places about how the parallels between the stories of the Israelites in Egypt and the people of Jesus' time, parallels between Moses and Jesus. Through Jesus Christ, we are delivered. It's not something we do to ourselves. God delivers us. It too is a before and after experience for us. Now, part of my role in this church, is to give people an opportunity to talk about their relationship with God. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to go into small groups because I know some of you hate that. But I would like to ask you to think about, just as the morning goes on, what deliverance means to you. Deliverance can be a surprisingly diverse experience. So let me give you some examples from my own experience. Over the years, I've heard some people talk to me about their thankfulness that God has delivered them from the guilt of what they have done wrong in their lives. Now, we all do things that we regret, things we feel sorry for, and that guilt can weigh down upon us. God, through Jesus Christ, forgives our broken places and lets us move on. Many people here have felt the relief when that weight falls off us, as we lose the fear of punishment. And in gospel hymns, we sing celebrations of deliverance quite frequently. Now, many people speak of this as the primary, possibly the only way in which we are delivered by Jesus. Jesus takes away our sin. But Jesus came, as we read in Luke chapter 14, verse 18, to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, and to let the oppressed go free. Jesus offered to us and to the people he ministered to that kind of care. He offers that to us, deliverance that is as literal as people walking free from slavery. As I've had people tell me stories like that about literal deliverance in their lives over the years of working in churches, and especially when I've worked in churches in communities which have been broken by poverty, individuals have spoken to me about their previous times in their lives when they've been ensnared by their habits and their ways of living that were destructive and hurtful, and God delivered them from that. Sometimes it's miraculous. A craving for a drug just disappears after a deep prayer on the matter. Or God can break the power of alcohol in people's lives. More rarely, in a church like this sort of church, people talk to me about being delivered from the power of money and the seduction of worldly status. And that too, if it happens, is a form of deliverance. Other people talk about deliverance as a transformation in their outlook on life. Before, they could only think one way. They were selfish or self-centered. God entered their life and they emerged as if from a prison, suddenly filled with love for everyone. Yet others talk about deliverance from despair. Once they felt defeated by their problems, now they see God's hand guiding and protecting. Some of the most profound conversations occur when people feel that God has delivered their loved ones from death. Sometimes that happens in the form of a miracle cure, but equally validly, it can occur when, instead of being frightened of death, a person who is terminally ill is transformed into seeing death as the gateway into a new life. So these are just some ways that we as Christians can talk about deliverance. Often people are struck deeply by one type of deliverance, and that's the before and after experience they focus on. In church, I think it's important to tell each other our stories of deliverance, about God's mighty power in our lives. As I say, I'm not going to break us into small groups to do that, but I'll leave it to you to decide if that's a conversation you feel you can have over coffee this morning, or maybe in your everyday life this week, if that's a conversation you can have with your friends. But I also want to spend a bit of time today on the in-between stories, about the spaces we hover in before we are assured of deliverance, the wilderness experience. Israel was delivered from Egypt, but they spent a long time in the wilderness, where they were often puzzled, often afraid, often doubting. They did not write their great story of Exodus until when they were in the wilderness. That came much later. hundreds of years later, the writing came of the Exodus story. And that came after the people had a great deal of time to digest what had happened to them and tell and retell the stories to themselves and then write it down. Sometimes deliverance is swift and crystal clear, but lots of times deliverance comes up in a muddled way, with us wandering in circles round the wilderness for a long time, filled with doubt or lost in the complexity of a situation. Now, we're thinking a lot at the moment, I know I am, and I think probably a lot of you are as well, about the hostages held in Gaza and praying for their deliverance. But Israel's response to the situation there can make simple prayers for deliverance not feel like it's dealing with the whole picture, with the complexity of the whole picture. So Gregor's going to press a button in a second that will show us a short video. Now, this is from a speech given by a mother of one of the people held as a hostage at the moment. The woman's called Rachel, and she's given the speech to the UN. Oh, she gave it over a week ago. Now, it's a very moving piece, and I'll warn you that, you know, for some people, this might feel quite emotional. Rachel herself holds herself together really admirably. She doesn't break down, but the story that she tells is obviously very difficult and very emotional. So let's listen. Sound problems. It's all right. Do we think it's never going to work? I can sum up what she said. Okay. Right. So Rachel talks about her son. Rachel's American, is a Jewish American woman, and her son is at the music festival, which you all will have heard of. And he's there with his friends, and they're having a lovely time, and then Hamas attack. And when that happens, her son runs into a shelter, which was there. And he's badly injured when he goes into the...
My name is...
I'd rather have her do it than me, so if we can get Rachel doing it.
Rachel, and I'm the mother of Hirsch Goldberg Polin. He's my eldest child and my only son. The last time I saw Hirsch was on Friday night, October 6th. We are Americans and Israeli, and we live in Jerusalem with Hirsch and our two daughters. We had gone as a family to synagogue and then to dinner at our friend's house. And at 11 p.m., Hirsch took his backpack he had brought with him, kissed me and kissed John, and headed out to meet one of his childhood friends whose name was Honor. And they were going to go to an all-night nature music festival in the south of Israel, ironically called the Festival of Unity and Love. The next morning, I was having a cup of tea when the bomb sirens started to blare in Jerusalem. John had already left for synagogue. I quickly woke my two daughters, and we went into our bomb shelter in our apartment. After 10 minutes, we came out, and although normally I don't use my phone on the Jewish Sabbath, because it was an emergency, I turned on my phone to make sure that Hirsch and Honor were okay. That was at 8:20 Saturday morning. Immediately, two texts popped up on my screen from 8:11. The first text said, "I love you," and the second said, "I'm sorry." And I immediately knew something horrible was unfolding in my world. We came to find out what happened. When the massacre that ultimately killed close to 300 at that music festival and more than 1,400 people total. When that massacre began, Hirsch, Honor, and 27 others managed to escape to a roadside bomb shelter and hid inside. Hamas militants came to the doorway and began throwing in hand grenades, which all witnesses with whom we have spoken said that Honor managed to pick up 8 of them and throw them back out. But 3 of those hand grenades did get by and detonated inside. Next, Hamas fired into this small concrete room of 29 music lovers, an RPG, and then sprayed the room with machine gun fire. After a couple of moments of the dust settling, Hamas entered. Most of those young people were now dead. Some were alive and wounded and trapped under the dead bodies, so they pretended to be dead. It is from those witnesses that we know that Hirsch and two other young men were ordered to stand, and when Hirsch stood up, they all saw that his left arm had been blown off from the elbow. He had somehow managed to put on some sort of tourniquet or bandage and walked out with the other two young men. They were loaded onto a Hamas pickup truck and headed toward Gaza. Hirsch's last cell phone signal was found inside of Gaza at 10:25 in the morning on October 7th. And since then, we have been given a video showing Hirsch getting into that truck with a bloody stump where his left arm used to be. And that was 18 days ago. And since then, we know nothing.
Later in that video, Rachel speaks about a Bedouin man who was a guard at the festival. The Bedouin man ran into the shelter as well, though he didn't, strictly speaking, need to, because he was not an Israeli man in the same way. He wasn't Jewish. But he ran into shelter. When the Hamas terrorists approached, he went outside and he said, I always get emotional when I say this. He said, I am a Muslim. Everyone in there is my family, which I think is a really powerful thing to say, which is why I get emotional when I'm saying it. So he saw them as his family. Obviously, they weren't his family, but he saw them as such. He tried to save them by doing that. He didn't just run away knowing that he wouldn't be targeted. Now, he was brutally beaten by the Hamas terrorists, and we don't know his fate. But Rachel, the woman you've just heard, who's obviously a very devout woman, and she's in an unimaginably awful situation, she takes comfort from knowing that someone stepped beyond his religion to see the common humanity and that we all share and to ask for deliverance. Deliverance. I don't know where you are at this morning. Some of you will be in a place of peace. There is a before and after in your life, and maybe you're in a very good place in that cycle. God has delivered you, and you're so grateful for that change in your life. Maybe it's deliverance from pain, or from grief, or from addiction, or from sickness, or from sin. Like the Israelites liberated from Egypt, you rejoice. You have a before and after story, and you can thank God fervently that you're in the after part of your story. Some of you can sing, like Miriam in today's passage, a song of celebration. Others of you may be stuck. You've been praying long and hard, and your prayers have gone up to God. But there you are in the wilderness, not feeling safe, and not feeling like you're in a place of peace. Our hearts can be stuck in the wilderness for long periods of time. We don't know how to tell the story in a before and after way because we're still feeling in the in-between. I think it's challenging preaching the story of Exodus at a time when we're witnessing the situation of the hostages in Gaza. Some of the hostages have been released, only a very few, unfortunately, and we celebrate, though, when that happens. But others are stuck in the wilderness. Others, broader than the hostages, the civilian population of Gaza, they're also stuck in the middle, and they're suffering terribly too, so they're in a different sort of wilderness. It's a time when it's hard to challenge and to trust in a God who delivers, but we need to live in that faith. God loved the people of Israel in Egypt. God loved them in the wilderness. God loved them in the promised land. So we hold each other tenderly, wherever we are. This week, let's tell each other our stories about deliverance. Completed, happy, joyful stories. But let's not be afraid to tell the half-finished, ambiguous stories that fill us with doubt. Together, we wait and hope for a God of deliverance who will provide an ultimate ending that is more beautiful than anything we can ask or imagine. Now we're going to sing a hymn, which hopefully you'll all know the tune, and I think the words are very powerful and very resonant. It's called "I Have a Dream," a man once said. Now obviously that's remembering Martin Luther King's vision of deliverance for his people, which is not yet fully realized, but which we can sing out his words of hope. So we're going to sing "I Have a Dream," a man once said.